we're just seeing a significant and widespread level of reform in Europe at the moment. It's just a real tidal wave of change.
I think the EU AI Act is a really important milestone in recognising the importance of fundamental rights.
There's a lot of layers here, I would say, in the implementation, but it will be worth watching closely as it unfolds.
After a significant period of development, the EU's AI Act came into force in 2024 and will regulate artificial intelligence systems in the European Union based on which risk category they fit into. Its provisions will mostly become applicable over the next 2 years. The Act is far from the only piece of legislation or agreement covering AI in the EU, with others including the Product Liability Directive, a proposed AI Liability Directive, and the Council of Europe Framework on Artificial Intelligence. In this podcast, considering the significance of such developments are Mark Rotenberg, President of the Centre for AI and Digital Policy and Chair of the IBA's AI Task Force, Ed Turtle, a senior lawyer on the products team at global law firm Cooley, with a focus on tech and AI, and an officer on the IBA Product Law and Advertising Committee, and Susie Allegri, human rights barrister and author on the impact of AI on human rights. Ed Turtle sets the scene.
We're just seeing a significant and widespread level of reform in Europe at the moment. It's unprecedented, certainly in my career and in the career of all of those I'm practicing with. It's just a real tidal wave of change. And that does create challenges for businesses to navigate these requirements. It also creates challenges for regulators to enforce them. So it's a dynamic environment.
The IBA's AI Task Force report, published in 2024, gathered the views of the IBA's members on AI regulation. Task Force Chair Mark Rotenberg.
In fact, a majority of the respondents said, you know, we favor somewhere between moderate and comprehensive regulation for AI. And I think this is actually from the experience in the legal field that comprehensive regulation or stable regulation actually promotes growth and innovation. So this was the first key point. But there was also support, I would say, for what we would call coherent regulation. Because there is a concern in this moment that if we have conflicting regulation or diverging regulation, this creates a lot of complexity for clients, for the profession. The AI Act is part of a larger so-called digital package that the EU over the past year has brought together, including the Digital Services Act and the Digital Markets Act, and there's a liability directive and some other measures. But what is significant about the AI Act is that it will force companies and lawyers to think about compliance issues in a way that they have not previously. Even the lawyers that may be familiar, for example, with the GDPR, which is the EU's influential data protection regulation, will now need to assess what additional requirements the AI Act imposes. So there's a lot to do. I think it will be influential. I spent many years studying the GDPR, and there's this famous book by a Columbia law professor called literally The Brussels Effect. And what Anu was describing was how the European Union, through regulation in Brussels, is able to influence markets and regulation around the world. We saw that with the GDPR. I anticipate we'll see it with the AI Act. And from a legal perspective, from a regulatory perspective, there's actually some benefit, I would say, in a common approach. That doesn't mean that the AI Act will stand alone, because we have many national governments with their own legislation. We have issues that the AI Act doesn't cover. But I think we will see significant influence both inside and outside the EU.
Susie Allegri is a human rights barrister and the author of the book Human Rights, Robot Wrongs, about the dangers of AI to fundamental human rights. She shares her view of the AI Act from a human rights perspective.
As a writer, I think I felt that a very common horror amongst creatives as to the way AI was being embraced as a replacement for human creativity. And so I think out of that fear, I started to think about, well, what does AI mean for writers, for artists, but also more broadly, what does it mean for human rights in general? And as I worked on the book, I realized that it affects so many rights. You know, our right to a fair trial, the way AI is being deployed in the justice system, our rights to freedom of information, our democratic rights, our right to protest, and fundamentally issues around human dignity. So it really covers every aspect of human rights and every aspect of our lives. I think the EU AI Act is a really important milestone in recognising the importance of fundamental rights in the development and deployment of AI globally. What it will mean in practice will depend very much on the implementation and enforcement. The EU AI Act introduces fundamental rights impact assessments, particularly for the public sector. So for public sector bodies using high-risk products, but also for private sector bodies that are providing public services with high-risk products. But again, what those fundamental rights impact assessments look like in practice is going to be key as to the effectiveness of the EU AI Act. And I mean, one of the big criticisms has been the exclusion of things like national security and defence, as well as research, from the scope of the EU AI Act. And so there is a danger that you may see research and development in those areas, which poses really significant risks for human rights, but which will not be captured by this this legislation. So I think it is a question of watch this space. I think it's going to be hugely impactful, not least because, like the GDPR, it has quite a global impact despite being EU level legislation.
Mark Rotenberg points to some safeguards and the enforcement regimes envisaged for the Act.
One misinterpretation of the AI Act, because it's described as a risk-based regulation, which is correct, is that people oftentimes ignore that this includes a category of prohibited AI systems. So when you think about risk, it's not just like turning a dial, you know, are we at low, medium, or high? That's certainly true in the way the AI Act is structured. But again, at the top, there is this very important category where we really have an off switch. And what the EU is saying in that category is you may not use AI systems for, you know, subliminal manipulation. You may not use AI systems for remote biometric identification. There are actually more than a half a dozen types of AI systems that will be prohibited by the AI Act. There is multiple layers, in fact, of enforcement contemplated under the AI Act. You have the national supervisory authorities that could be a data protection agency or telecom agency, or maybe as in Spain, a new AI agency. That's one type of implementation. You have the work of the AI office at the Commission, which is going to play a critical coordinating role. You have an independent scientific panel to provide expert advice. And then you have an advisory stakeholder panel to ensure that the insights of the public and the business community are represented in the ongoing discussion. So there's a lot of layers here, I would say, in the implementation. Certainly the need for some coordination, but it will be worth watching closely as it unfolds.
Ed Turtle points out that although many obligations on those affected by the Act will be familiar, it is likely to draw in new groups.
So the key question for most companies is determining whether or not they're in a high-risk category or not. And then if they do, then a range of obligations flow from that. Those obligations are not wholly novel. A lot of these obligations are based on product safety and compliance concept. So you have things like conformity assessments, which is familiar to manufacturers of hardware products, CE marking, compliance with harmonized standards, and information and warnings that need to go along with AI systems. The difference, I think, here is that this is a very comprehensive piece of legislation that will apply to a lot of software products that and historically, most of these obligations have really applied in the hardware context. So it's a lot of new actors who may not be familiar with this, with these types of obligations.
Views on the AI Act have been mixed. Ed Turtle and Mark Rotenberg.
But there are certainly some detractors who think this has gone too far, and the cost and resources required by companies to get into compliance with this were going to be of a degree that could threaten startups and innovation in Europe.
But then at the other end, interestingly, and these are many of the leading experts who say the EU did not go far enough. They actually want to impose more restrictions, particularly on the foundational models and the models that rely on large compute, because from their perspective, looming in the background is what's sometimes called artificial general intelligence. And this type of AI presumably could not only replace human decision making, which by itself I think is a scary thought, but could also impact us in ways that we don't yet understand. So EU AI Act, I think most people say, you know, well done. But these criticisms are interesting.
Ed Turtle outlines some of the other EU legislation or proposed legislation relevant to AI in Europe.
Europe decided to revisit the Product Liability Directive to try and make it fit for purpose in the context of new technologies, complete overhaul of the Product Liability Directive. And it's going to have a significant impact for AI systems in particular. Overall, the revisions are going to make what is already a pro-consumer regime, a strict liability regime, where you don't need to establish fault and a producer is responsible for damage caused by a defective product, regardless of whether or not they're at fault for that. But it's going to allow more claims, it's going to increase the scope of damages that can be claimed, and it's going to make it easier for claimants to prove their case. A regime that sort of traditionally really concerned itself with physical harms is now being expanded to cover a much broader concept of harm. So things like psychological harm, mental health impact, but also destruction, corruption of data. The revised version of the PLD also creates a number of circumstances in which the burden of proof can be reversed. So rather than the claimants having to prove the elements of their case, causation or defect, the defendant will have to prove that their product actually wasn't defective. Circumstances in which that can happen are relevant to AI systems, are where there's an non-compliance with product safety regulations. So if you don't comply with the complex regulatory regimes that are applicable to your AI systems, that in itself can be a circumstance sufficient to presume that the product was defective. The AI Liability Directive is designed to harmonize fault-based liability for AI systems. And when I say fault-based liability, I mean claims in it, for example, in negligence under national member state laws. It's unusual for sort of the EU to regulate in that space, but there was a belief that they needed to harmonize the fault-based regime, because when you bring a product liability claim, you typically have a choice of whether you want to bring it under the strict liability regime, the Product Liability Directive and national implementations of that, or bring a fault-based claim in contract or negligence, for example. Often you may bring both side by side. And it was felt those that sort of failing to address the challenges that were perceived to be posed by AI systems on the fault in sort of within the fault-based regime meant that there was an inadequate overall response. So it wasn't enough just to amend the PLD. Given the advantages of the strict liability regime that you have under the PLD and the sort of how significant the changes are under the PLD, it seems to me that that will be more frequently used as a means of bringing claims in respect of many products, but certainly AI systems.
Susie Allegri considers the Council of Europe's new Framework Convention on Artificial Intelligence.
One of the bonuses of the Council of Europe Framework Convention is that it goes beyond Europe. So there were other countries involved, including really crucially the US. But again, it has those problems identified by civil society in the EU AI Act of limited application in the spheres of sort of national security and defence, and also is really very much limited to the public sector, although it does have some references to obligations on states to sort of keep an eye on what the private sector is doing. But it could have been more expansive, and civil society, I think, were quite disappointed that it didn't go as far as they felt it could have. But I think one of the really important things about the Framework Convention in the Council of Europe context is that I think that Framework Convention will really help to inform the European Court of Human Rights in applying the European Convention on Human Rights to emerging technology and AI. And that is where we will see the development of hard law that has certainly regional and potentially global implications. So I think in both cases, the EU AI Act and the Council of Europe Framework Convention, I think they're very important for demonstrating that human rights is law and that human rights law applies to technology and AI.